Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 97.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help as many interested people around the world learn and improve at jazz piano by providing structured and organized jazz piano education. I'm your host, as always, Brendan Lowe, and thank you so much for joining me on today's episode number 97. And this is going to be Wint Kelly solo analysis on Freddy the Freeloader, just the first chorus. So I thought it'd be nice to kind of roll into episode 100, doing a couple kind of analysis and just featuring a couple great, you know, some of the great pianists, and I might roll that over into 101, 102, 103, so forth, do a series on that. But, we've done so much educational materials on how to get to a certain level, and again, I've talked about so much about learning building blocks and things like that, and I also believe it's extremely important, obviously, to study the greats who came before us and learn from what they were doing, because each of them has a sound, right? And I love, in my lessons and teaching, you know, I love talking about people's sound, you know, like, why does Wint Kelly sound like Wint Kelly? Why does Oscar Peterson sound like Oscar Peterson? You know, Herbie, Chick? Because some of the things they're playing, right? You know, I had this great conversation with my student the other day, and some of the things that they're playing, it's not technically difficult. I mean, obviously a lot of what they do is, but a lot of what they do isn't as well. But it's about the groove and the soul that they provide, right? And the touch. So a lot of the fine nuances and details and elegance they put into their playing and groove and soul, you know, kind of things that really can't be taught too well, except besides listening and pointing them out. That's why I'm doing this analysis. A lot of those things are essentially what really bring out their sound and make them sound fantastic, right? Because you and I can play a lot of their solos and a lot of the small things they're doing, but again, it's about where they put accents, some of the trills they use, you know, their swing feel and things like that. So all these small nuances make them sound great. And again, that's what separates really high top professional jazz playing from, you know, and as you move down the levels, you kind of lose some of that stuff, right? And so I was talking about my student, you know, about how to get better, you know, and once you reach a certain level of information, you know, so much information, right? But how do you continue to advance? Because you're going to sound a certain way, right? And it's about understanding textures, space, and movements to really bring you to that next level. And someone who could be playing the same thing exactly as you are, right, can sound much better than you. And though they're playing the same notes, right? And so that right there should be an indicator to let you know that it's not all about notes, right? And I think a lot of us fall into that trap. It's not all about notes. You know, a lot of it is about, again, the touch, your touch on the piano, your accents, your swing, your drive, your feel, and a lot of these small nuances. So, you know, we're thinking so much about what do we play, what do we play, what are the cool licks, but it's not always about that. So that's why I want to kind of get going with this series and kind of really point out some really nice things that are simple yet give someone their kind of sound and can really add to your sound as well. So with that being said, let's dive right into episode number 97. So this is going to be Wint Kelly's solo on Freddy the Freeloader. And again, if you're looking for the podcast material, this is going to be the transcription on this Wint Kelly solo for Freddy Freeloader. Go to jazzpianoschool.com/podcast97. So Wint starts out with a nice little trill over this kind of semi-blues. So what he's doing here, it's a nice relationship with the sharp 11 over a dominant chord. And again, this kind of, a lot of analyzing transcriptions is about building relationships with certain movements. Now this movement, I have a nice relationship with this kind of movement, and you'll see, you can develop this as well with the sharp 11. Now the sharp 11 is great as an approach note around the 5, right? Stuff like that. So So this sharp 11 in the 6 that surrounds the 5 on any dominant chord is an amazing way to use different types of approaches to land on that 5 and continue your scale, right? That's a very common line. So what we're doing here is approaching, right, the 5 and then approaching the 3rd. We can continue up to the 1 if we want. But anyway, so what Wynton does here is he starts on the upbeat of 1 and then adds a nice little trill, which is essentially an approach, right, to the 5. And then he just has a little accent on the 1. Has some space there. And so that's kind of, he's saying something there. He's saying a little motif, right? He's stating like a phrase, right? He says something. And then he ends his phrase, kind of resolves it. And then he goes down to the 1. So he goes up to the 1, right, on the first phrase, and then goes down to the 1 on the second phrase. It's a very nice little put together line. Now he continues this motif up in the 3rd measure, right, by kind of stating what he did in the first measure. So in the first measure, again, he says this, right? And then in the 3rd measure, he kind of adds to that. Okay, so he has that kind of, similar phrase, you know, that goes up to the 1, and that just like the first measure. And then the 4th measure is similar to the 2nd measure. So he has this really nice connected lines that are very, very simple, but they all are really, you know, just kind of flow together. And the 4th measure, so the first measure, again, he goes up. And then the 2nd measure, he goes down. 3rd measure, he goes up. 4th measure, he goes down. Now again, note selection wise, what he's doing here in the 2nd measure, right? He's approaching the 5 again with the 6. Just a really nice resolution. But again, his approach is from the chord scale above to the 5. And then resolving to the 1 on the downbeat of 4, which is kind of nice. Right, so again, rhythmically for the first 4 measures, you know, he starts on the upbeat for the trill. Then he starts on beat 2, which is really kind of interesting, right? Think about starting your lines on different beats, because that's really going to add to, you know, the rhythmic improv of your solo, right? So then he starts on beat 2 again, 1, 2, and 3, and 4. He ends his phrase on beat 4 again. He starts his phrase on beat 2 again, 1, 2, and 3, and then starts on beat 2 again, 1, 2, and 3, and. So again, rhythmically, measures 3 and 4 are exactly the same. Now, the progression changes, right, to the 4 chord, the E-flat 7. Now, what we have here is this, right? So what is he doing here, right? So this is kind of an interesting line, right? He starts on the 5, 1. So that's a very nice line. All he's doing is essentially targeting 5, 1, and 5, right? 5, 1, and 5. But he's targeting with, again, the 6, 5, right? And where did we hear that approach before, right? From the 5 to 6. We heard that in the 2nd measure of the solo. Right, so he obviously likes using the 6 to the 5. That's a nice approach. And again, when looking at analysis of transcriptions, you can use certain things like that. Now, every time you see a 6 to the 5 or you're playing a dominant chord, you're going to associate that approach in that dominant chord, and you can use it all around. It's fantastic, right? All right, so here we go. So instead of going to the 1, right, which you could have done, he could have done this. Right, he does this. He goes to the flat 7, right? And then he resolves to the 1 right here. Okay? So again, he does get back to the 1, you know, using the 6, 5, 1, but he just kind of delays it. So he goes 6, 5, flat 7, 3, then 1, right? Then in measure, 4, 5, 6, right? He has a trill. Kind of this bluesy trill using the flat 7, right? Now for fingering here, you know, I'm not really sure what's best, whatever's most comfortable. I would use 3-4-3-2-1. You know, or you can do crossover. That might be the best because you're landing with your thumb on the F there. So again. So he kind of had this bluesy lick. But again, as he resolves, right? It's a kind of funny resolution over the E flat because he's resolving to the 4 and then to the 9, right? So it kind of leaves you hanging, which is an interesting sound. And again, most people wouldn't say to do that, but by looking at his solo, you know, it sounds good. So 4-9. So that's another kind of resolution you might have in your playing that you might not have thought about before. Then we go back to the 1 chord, and he has a little bit more of a blues thing going here. Right, this is a very bluesy lick. So 1, triplet, right? Blues lick, chromatic. So that's kind of an approach. You can think about that as an approach to the 3. Right, you can use that in all keys. Right, whatever key you want, you can take that little approach and use it. And again, he kind of finishes his line off with the 16th note, which is nice, instead of an 8th note, right? And again, this rhythmic variation, if you listen to the last podcast, is what really kind of, you know, adds to the contrast of the solo. He's got the 16th notes, right? He's got a triplet in the next measure. And then he's ending with a 16th note, which is really, really nice, right? So besides the note selection, he's going to the 3rd, 1, 5, 4, and then resolving to the 3 again. So again, this kind of whole pattern of blues stuff is really something you should integrate. That relationship with the notes, especially 3-1-5-4-3. Right? That's used a lot in blues. Okay, so he continues on in measure 8. Which is a nice kind of little line here. He switches from single notes to octaves, and he's going 5-1-3-5-6, and leading up to the flat 7, or excuse me, the approach to the 3rd of the F7 now, right? So blues scale, kind of a half step below approach into the 3rd, and then just going down through the Mixolydian scale of the blues, you know, of the F7 Mixolydian. Then, this is really interesting. So, one thing to point out before is that's a really nice texture to switch from single notes to octaves, right? So, he's adding octaves in the middle of his line, which is really nice. And kind of difficult, actually, at the same time. Right? And the other cool thing about this is where he's placing his accents, right? So he's accenting the upbeat of 4. So he's accenting this in particular octave right here to lead into the 3rd. Then he's accenting the approach into the next chord, which is essentially E flat, but he's doing that on beat 4. So he's accenting and starting his approach on beat 4 before the chord even happens. So that concept right there is very, very important to realize, right? You can start your approach into chords on beat 4 of the measure before, right? Or even beat 3. I talked about that with the Benny Green transcription, right? So he's starting his approach into the 3rd, right? Before the chord has even happened. So he approaches the 3rd, goes to the 7. Again, that's kind of a fun line. So he approaches 7, flat 7, 6, 5, 9, flat 7. Again, that's a nice combination of notes. And again, you might not think about that, kind of over a dominant 7 chord, right? Except for now. So again, approach to the 3rd. There's beat 1. And again, this kind of motion of these notes combination could be really nice to add into your solos as well. That combination right there. You know, I probably never play that combination specifically, but it's nice when looking at a solo. Then we simply add in the beginning part, right? You know, and then you got a nice combination of notes. Okay, so then we're continuing on. He does the same thing. He uses the same approach, right? Going to the G. Now we go to the A flat 7 here, and he lands on the 6, right? And then uses sharp 11 in his solo, right? And so as he moves down through the, here's our sharp 11 to our A flat 7, right? And that's how he kind of resolves on that 6, right? The 13, rather, of the A flat 7, which is a nice thing. So he's ending on a 13. He's ending on a tension, or not a tension, but an extension, right? So he doesn't really have many chord tones in this little line here, right? In fact, he doesn't have anything at all. And really, if you look at this, he's outlining a B-flat major triad, which creates that 9, sharp 11, and 13 sound, right? It's kind of like an upper structure triad. And he's just approaching it with this same approach, which he used before. So he's using a motif, right? Which we talked about before. He's using a motif because he just used this approach. And now he's using it again to connect his ideas together. And then he's kind of outlining this chord here, which is giving him a certain sound. It's giving him this upper structure triad sound, right? This right here, right? Okay, then he continues on, and that's the end of the first chorus. So I'm not going to go further than that, but the continuation to lead into the next chorus, right? He has a nice little eighth note into a triplet, right? Now, again, this is tough. Like, this is not easy stuff. So, again, you could, as far as the fingering goes, because he's using single notes into an octave. So, you could go this way, but you have to get to the octave. So, the only thing I can imagine that he did with his fingers to finger this, right, would be 1, 2, 3, 4, and then hit his octave here. Now, if you look at this, right, this is going to go against all books you've read. Okay, but again, it sounds great, and he's doing it because it's Wynton Kelly, and he can pull it off. So this is just a prime example to don't when people tell you not to do something, it doesn't mean you always have to not do it, right? Do whatever you want to do, okay? So he's going like this. Like, look at my hand. If you're watching the video right now, my hand's pretty contorted. But again, all that needs to happen is that you don't hold this position. You just roll your hand and lift your hand up. That way you're not hurting your hand at all. Right, so he can get to that octave, right? And then he goes to a 5-1, and again, he loves landing on beat 4 with like a quarter note. He's done that a lot throughout, his solo, right? He'll put a quarter note or lead up to a beat on beat 4, like his lines will lead up to that, right? 4-1, 4-1, okay? And so he slides into the third, and again, moving back to beat 1 here. So he's still playing the same chord, upper structure triad that he just used in the previous measure. So then all he does here is he outlines the 6, the 13 rather, right, for our A flat 7, 13, flat 7, 9. He's just going up now. Right, and he added the flat 7 in there. So he's outlining the same thing. So you got to think about these different types of motifs. Like, this is a melodic motif. He's stringing together so many motifs. And if you didn't really kind of take the time to look at this, I mean, it's brilliant. Right? So this last line, if I start it over again, he starts again on the upbeat, right, of 2. So this is in measure 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7 on 8, right? So 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and 1, and 2. So again, he lands on a non-chord tone, but he's resolving into a chord tone. So all his approaches are before, you know, well, the first here he approaches after the beat. So 1, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 1. There he lands on a chord tone on beat 1, the flat 7. And then he continues 4, and 1, 2, and 3, and 4. And then, so he has these two motifs, the sliding motifs in that he continues to use. Then he has the melodic motifs of the initial approaches, right? These approaches here, that slide there, that slide there, slide again, but on a different beat. So he changes up the rhythmic motif. And then he creates a melodic motif out of the upper structure triad of the B flat major chord. And then uses that motif again to go up, but changes the rhythm and adds octaves. And then lands on the first chord. So, you know, just the simplicity of this is amazing. And there's a reason it's so, you know, just iconic. Obviously, the album kind of blew, but the solo, it's, I mean, Miles and him, this solo, it's so simple. But there's certain details, like I said in the beginning, that are small. And there's certain nuances that give the sound of Wynton Kelly, right? So a lot of the triplets, the swing feel he's using, you know, the way he's kind of his grace notes switching into octaves he's doing, some of the trills he's doing, the slides, right? The motifs he's using. And obviously his, some of his left-hand voicings, we won't get into that. But so many of these small nuances are what really create his sound, right? And if you're looking for that sound, you have to kind of ask yourself, what am I looking for? Am I looking for the Wynton Kelly sound? Because then you'll need to add in these certain trills, right? Certain trills like that, these slides. Again, his thing about going from single notes, you know, into octaves, right? Stuff like that, that's a very Wynton Kelly-esque thing to do. But again, when you're analyzing players, think about the sound you want to get. Do you want to get a traditional sound, right? Errol Garner, Earl Hines, you know, even more traditional stuff like this. Do you want to get a more modern sound, a medium modern sound, bebop sound? Because you have to study these players and kind of see what's going on, what creates that sound in their improv to, you know, get you to that certain level. Now, there's a lot of things in their improv that get you there. Like all the analysis I just did, you need to have a great concept of approach notes, bebop approach notes, the different extensions, triads, and all that stuff comes from learning, you know, step by step how to go through these different components. But once you have those building blocks, like we teach all that stuff in Jazz Piano School, once you have this stuff, then you can start to look at these solos and really, just really take and use and borrow, you know, the type of sound that you're going for, because you'll understand everything that's going on and you can be like, oh, that's why you get that sound. But without kind of understanding the movements that are happening and some of the chord tones he's landing on and going through, you know, all that you're really doing is just playing his solo, and you don't have any idea of what's actually happening, right? And that creates chains, it creates kind of handcuffs into the freedom of improvisation. So it's kind of a way to do that, right? But hopefully that helped going over the analysis, and I'll continue to do this with a couple more players as we roll into the 100th podcast on Jazz Piano School. So again, to go get that first page of the Wynton Kelly solo, you can go to jazzpianoschool.com/podcast97. All right, I hope you guys have a fantastic day. And I'll talk to you later, and happy practicing.